This episode is brought to you by VW Trends Magazine. Check them out for all the latest trends in the VW scene. You can subscribe to the magazine at VWTrendsMagazine.com.
Good morning and welcome to the show. My name is Sean Smith.
And my name is Prescott Phillips, and this is Brew City Bug Talk.
Good morning and welcome back to the show. Hey, how's it going today, Prescott?
It's going good. We're going to have a good show.
Cool.
Good show today.
What's new? What's exciting? What do we got coming up?
Well, you wanted me to talk to you about the Instagram. You want to do that first?
No, I want you to talk about what you wanted to talk about first.
Okay. What's today? Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Monday, I sent in our registration for the Michigan Buggy Builders Swap Meet Show that's coming up in March, the end of March.
For our listeners that don't know, what is the Michigan Buggy?
The Michigan Buggy Builder Show is the longest running Volkswagen, well, not Volkswagen only, but pretty much is Volkswagen only indoor swap meet. It's over 30 years it's been in existence, and it's in the Lansing, Michigan Convention Center. And I've been going to it for 30 years, and we've gone with few as two or three people, and this year we eight people going. So there'll be eight of us going. We'll have a giant four spot spread, and we'll have a bunch of junk for sale, and I'll bring some books to sign for all my fans.
So if you guys are listening and you are in the Michigan area, it's March 24th. We will be there with a booth. We're not going to be doing show stuff, but I mean, you can stop by, say hello to both of us at the Michigan.
We'll be giving away stickers and
selling books, kissing babies, shaking hands.
Shaking babies,
kissing hands. Uh-huh. What do they say?
So because we have four spots. So we'll have a pretty good presence there. And yeah, we'll have junk to sell, and we'll pick up some stuff. And there'll be eight of us. It'll be me, Sean, the other Sean, Steve Hansen, Willie and Bill, and Doom Buggy Dave.
All the guys and people that you don't know because they haven't been on the show yet. We got to get them on the show one of these days.
Yeah, we'll get all of them on the show all at once.
Yes, definitely. We'll just have a room full of people.
Who
step
are
up
you?
To the microphone.
Step up to the microphone. Yeah, so that'll be fun. Okay, so let's talk about the Instagram.
Well, I'm excited to announce that we put together an Instagram account, and it's BC Bug Talk on Instagram. And basically what my plan is for the Instagram is I want to try and post pictures of the vehicles and the stuff we talk about with our guests. So that way, not only can you hear about it in this podcast, you can go on our Instagram page and you can see some photos of the actual vehicles that we talk about on this show, or maybe like what Dan Ledbetter, I have his pile of the month article.
Did you see what he posted yesterday?
Yes, he posted. He sent me that same thing, and then he went
pile of the month.
Yep. So that'll be on our Instagram page, but it's also on the VW Trends Instagram page, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then I got like Mark Carlman. He talked about a bunch of vehicles and some ice racing. So I have a bunch of photos from him that I put up there.
Mm-hmm.
I have some of your photos. Agent Orange will be up there. So your first show car that we talked about in that episode will be posted on there, along with some other stuff. So very cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Love it.
All right, so what do we got going on the show today? Who is our guest?
Today we have a special guest.
Special guest.
He's been a longtime friend of mine. I'd like to welcome Peter Kay.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
Peter has been in the Volkswagen scene in the Milwaukee area for his whole life, actually. And he's, believe it or not, he's older than me. So, but it's weird how everybody knows Peter in the area, because if you're into Volkswagens, there's no way you couldn't know of him or buy parts from him or get answers to your questions from him. And everybody's, oh, yeah, I know Peter Kay. And he seems like to be the glue, the connector between a lot of people. And it's great. I'm glad he's on the show, because he has a ton of cool stories.
So very cool. So I guess the first question we have for you, who are you and how did you get into Volkswagens?
My name is actually Karumpolis, Peter Karumpolis.
Nobody calls you that.
And I go by Peter Kay because of my racing days, and the announcers were miserable.
They slaughtered it.
They were miserable with my name. So on my race cars, everything, it just says Peter Kay. Engine builds Peter Kay, whatever.
So you know, we ask everybody how they got into Volkswagens. What was your first, like, as far as you can remember back, when what was the first exposure to the Volkswagen design?
Well, at 15 years old, my dad gave me a 58 Bug. He needed to drive longer distance faster, and the 36 horsepower wasn't cutting it. You know, the car was sweet. It had the German aftermarket gauge in it for the gas tank and oil temperature, little square thing in between.
Next to the speedometer, the knobs. Yeah.
And it was a little square plastic thing in between the light switch and the windshield wiper switch up there. Pretty rare. Anyway,
what happened to that car?
It ended up being turned into a dune buggy.
Awesome.
What year would you say this was?
This was 1967. I was 15 years old.
Okay.
I drove that car to my driver's test and learned how to drive it on country roads and stuff. I lived out in a rural area of Mequonago, Wisconsin, on Phantom Lake, and we could drive. We weren't supposed to, but we could drive.
Well, you used to drive on the lake when it was frozen.
Oh, yeah. We used to drive definitely on the lake.
Your mom still lives out there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I still have the lake property. We had a 56 Ford pickup truck for a utility vehicle, and I learned how to spin donuts and ice race on the lake. My brother and I were maniacs. Never hit anybody, never hit any ice shanties.
The lack of traction was the savior.
It was just the gas. So I had racing, and my vision of being a race car driver was before I even got my first bug.
Oh, wow.
The bug thing was miraculous because it was affordable and fun, and the Volkswagen dealer was 20 miles away, and the high school principal had a bug. Latin teacher had a bug, and I had a bug, got to drive it to school. And the kids would pick it up and do weird shit to it sometimes.
Yeah. In the winter, they'd always put it sideways in a spot so you couldn't leave.
Or wrap the bumper around the pole, you know, pick it up.
Hook a bumper.
But anyway, that was just fun. I could always get someone to push start the thing and give them a ride home to school because... I was pretty poor back then, so the battery in the winter when it was 20 below zero needed a little love.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I remember back in the day, I would take the battery in the house with me. You know, it was the only way it was going to start. It's like, oh, it's going to be below zero. Okay, well, battery's going to come with me and sit by the back door, and then I go get back in my car in high school. I'm like, well, I gotta put the battery in it first.
That's why they designed the car with the battery inside the cab.
So yeah, right. You just reach back there and pull it.
I got a job at a Volkswagen repair shop in New Berlin. It used to be a gas station. Right? Mm-hmm. I used to have pump gas there. It was 22.9, 25.9. And the gas thing dried up, and we just fixed Volkswagens there. And basically all I did was change oil, adjust valves, and cleaning parts. I spent lots of hours and watching parts for them.
So over the years, you just self-taught mechanic, basically?
I never had a Bentley manual till later in life, but I've rebuilt my first 40 horsepower motor just on a wooden buck with holes drilled in it so the head studs could go through the board and stabilize it. I didn't have an engine stand or anything, but I was able to get it apart and put it together, and didn't line bore it. So the oil pressure light would come on sometimes at idle because I would just put new bearings in a case that needed to be line bored. But the bug was fun. I could get parts for it at the dealer. And there was also J.C. Whitney, which was like magic sending away for stuff like that.
Yeah, because they had their own Volkswagen only part of the catalog. And J.C. Whitney is based in Chicago, so it was relatively close.
Yep.
If you really want to take a road trip, you just go get it.
Did that once or twice.
Yeah, that was no fun. That's a crappy part of town.
Oh my goodness gracious.
it's like stay in a car.
It was fun though. And then after I blew up the first Volkswagen, I found a Volkswagen in town that needed a right front fender. It was smashed and it had a 40 horse in it. It was a 61 with a synchro gearbox.
Oh man.
I thought I was God.
Now you could shift.
So I started taking parts off of the 58. So my first car was Frankenstein. It had a tanned rear fender and a blue front fender, and the car
was
red.
Not uncommon.
Didn't paint anything.
Oh.
We'd go to Robbie and get spray bombs and match paint once I started buying and selling Volkswagens to Matt.
Very cool. So you said that's your first Volkswagen that you've owned was
a 58.
A 58.
And then I blew it up, got a 61, so I already started accumulating them. And then one of the kids in high school got T-bowed in his bug, and I bought that one and used that motor and that tranny for my dune buggy. And parted that car out.
How much did you buy the car for? I'm just curious.
It was $75.
Oh my God.
And the 61 I bought for $35, that with the fender was tore out.
Yeah. What year was this? What year?
There's 69 I bought the 40 horse. 69.
Oh my God. And you figure this stuff's only 3, 4, 5 years old. I mean, wow. It's pretty new stuff.
But the brand new bug back then was only $1,800. A 68 brand new 68 yeah, bug was $1,800, and a neighbor bought one.
They used to advertise the year was what it cost. Wow. And then
yeah. Could you imagine getting a car nowadays for 2024? Well, that would just blow your mind.
Well, if you know, you're new to BWs, but if you've ever been in a brand new 68 bug after driving a 40 horse.
Oh, it's like night and day.
It was like driving a Corvette. Yeah. I mean, at a 1500 and then the thing would go 80 miles an hour.
Yeah, and it had ball joints and all the cool stuff.
And I got the neighbor let me drive it a few times, and I'm going, oh boy, I'm going to get myself a 1500 someday, but that took a while.
So how many bugs do you think?
How many Volkswagens?
I lost track at over 200.
200? Oh,
wow. Yeah, see, I wouldn't even have guessed that much.
Because I have a ledger.
Yeah, see, I have a ledger too, but I stopped at like
50. I stopped at 120.
Wow, those are Mr. Busco numbers.
And I think, yeah, Peter's got the record now for sure. See, and
Peter K.
I
numbers.
I think I learned that from you because I think I seen that list. And I'm like, well, I should do that because my memory's going.
Yeah, but it was just a challenge, a brain challenge. But yeah. My brother was in the Volkswagens too, and he was 2 years younger than me. So we'd buy on Sunday. We'd get the journal on Saturday night and go buy in bugs. Yeah,
we talked about this on another podcast. And the Sunday journal in Milwaukee was like the Bible. Was like and yeah, you couldn't wait for that paper to hit the door.
And we'd go down to the journal itself and pick up the ones that were going to Green Bay, buy them on Saturday night.
Saturday night.
You could call them up and buy the car on Saturday night.
And they'd go, how are you even, the paper isn't in and out yet? And it's like, well, we got the classified part of it. The only part that you didn't get on Saturday was the ads and stuff, the supermarket ads and crap like that. You didn't care about that. All we wanted was a classified, so we threw the rest of the newspaper away.
To pause real quick for our younger listeners, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is the newspaper that was here. And it used to have a classified ad set. So it was basically like the Craigslist of the day. The Facebook marketplace of back in the day.
Yeah, it was like the only outlet you had on a weekly basis to see anything for sale, anything.
So you would get you would get the newspaper and you would open it up and it would show you
listings. There'd be 100 Volkswagens on a Sunday journal.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
But I'm talking in the 70s.
Yes. Yeah.
And into the 80s. Mm-hmm. As soon as these cars got 15 years old, they started falling apart really bad, and that's why I started cutting them up a lot.
Yeah, and they were beyond repair.
Yeah, there was no way I could save all the cool cars I cut up. It was like I had a cannibalize one, put the other one, and my brother and I worked our way through college buying and selling Volkswagens.
You probably financed your off-road racing by selling bugs, junk.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's how everybody worked it.
So how did you two end up meeting? So let's get into the story of that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I remember the first time. This is correct. You know, I'm old and senile.
We'll have
Terry Friday. You had Agent Orange.
Yeah, right.
And you brought Agent Orange up to Terry Friday. Had a little Volkswagen show.
Yep.
And I brought my Notch back up to try to sell it. I put it on the tow bar because I assumed that somebody would want that thing. Huh. And I had a Notchback that was
what year?
So it was a 64 Notch.
Okay.
And I had put the later model front disc brakes on it and four lug wheels, and it was totally drivable, 12 volted.
How much were you selling it for?
Back then, I was trying to get $1,500, $1,600.
I'll take it.
Was I trying to sell my Agent Orange car that
year? Yeah, you were trying to sell it, yeah, and you had a for sale sign on it and all that. And you came up there and.
I thought I met you before that, though.
at somewhere at Mofoco, you might have been in the back at Mofoco, and I would mosey on through and them TIG weld my gears when you weld third and fourth gears. Dave Henning would do that quick for me if I had changed gears or blew up a box or something.
Right.
And we, at any time, he drops.
Ran into each other there.
I can't remember when you started working at Mofoco. You'd have to tell me that.
Yeah, that was in the 81.
Well, anyway, I remember actually talking to you in person and admiring Agent Orange and at Terry Friday's.
Terry Friday owned Friday's Off-Road Center, and that was in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And back when he had his shop, he would do a little summer car show swap meet thing. We drove all the way up to Oshkosh, 50, 60 miles.
It's an hour. Yeah.
Yeah, 60 miles.
Yeah, it's an hour.
I remember going to that show. I remember seeing you there, but I don't think that was the first name. I thought I had bought parts from you.
And anything's possible, but I remember specifically meeting your wife, your first wife, at that show and looking at the car. I'd never seen Agent Orange before that Terry Friday show. So
that would have been...
I don't know what you were driving. What Terry Friday show, because Carlman ended up buying my notch and rolling it over because dog jumped in the steering wheel. On the curvy roads out to the lake, those curvy roads on I, and he flipped it over and gasoline everywhere. He's lucky he didn't burn up. He bought my notch, which was incredible, nice car, but it was a Frankenstein. It had different colored fenders on it and whatever, and I wasn't in the mood to paint the thing because nobody wanted Type 3s back then.
No.
And I had a header on it and a 1600 with dual carbs, and it was a fun car to drive. I love Type 3s. I've had a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, they drive different, that's for sure. So back in the day, you had a small shop. We always said it's in the ghetto. It was. It's downtown Milwaukee. So what year would that be?
What was the name of your shop?
Well, it had no name. It was, I started out hanging out with the guys that had... They called it Corvette Alley. They fixed Corvettes, and I just weaseled my way in. Those buggies I showed you pictures of, those chopped up things with a roll bar and two seats, they're Elkhart Lake buggies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how I fixed motors for those guys, and then I got into the shop there and eventually was able to paint bugs and do stuff in the shop. I elbowed my way into the shop as on Locust and Humboldt. It was just a three-car garage that had... 220 and air, a refrigerator, and a potbelly stove for the winter.
So did you have your own stall there, or did you have the whole shop?
I had the whole shop when I rent. There's three other guys involved, but they weren't quite as active as cutting Volkswagens up as I was, and changing motors and buying a car that had that was hitting the front and had a good motor and wheel and deal. And that why I ended up so many cars is because we had always had, my brother had a bug, I had a bug, and we had a spare bug in case one of our brake lines broke, throttle cable broke.
Yeah, you needed.
We had a spare car. You just jump in and change the license plates, which we weren't supposed to do. You just change the plates.
And
they had
roll.
Zippers on the license plates and rock and roll.
So how many years were you down there in the hood?
Well, 1970, I went to the east side and started hanging around in 72 with the buggies. Corvette Alley, and then I had a shop with Mark Ernster on Newhall, where we built the race cars were built on Newhall and Bradford and Newhall.
We mentioned the shop in the ghetto, and tell us the story about, I love this story, your wife and why you moved out of the ghetto and into the suburbs.
Are you talking about the bullet through the window?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
That story.
Okay. I lived on Astor and Brady, and it was a fashionable east side. My wife was sitting at the kitchen table, and a bullet came flying through hit the back of the microwave.
Oh, my God.
And I had the microwave on a pedestal, and between the two rear windows in the kitchen, it was a long Polish flat type house. The spent bullet... landed by her feet after it ricocheted off the microwave.
Oh, my goodness.
And soon after that, she was looking for a house. And I was paying too much money rent and on Holton and Keefe that it was a beautiful shop as far as freezing my ass off in the winter and living with a propane heater and pointed at your balls all winter because I couldn't afford to heat the place because I was renting a quarter of a warehouse.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to heat up a whole warehouse.
Oh, and it was. But most of the time, you could tough it out. I could manage to get stuff done and do everything I had to do.
So your wife, she was bound and determined to find a nice place for you.
Right. So she bought a garage with a house attached. She bought a five-car garage attached to a real nice Landonstone house, and it had a workshop attached to it with three stalls facing the road. And it's a pretty cool place, and I've lived out there since 1987. And done a lot of Volkswagen stuff out there.
Yeah.
And my 911 and all kinds of cool projects.
Yeah. And I've met a lot of people out there. You introduced me to Scott Hansen. One day I was at the shop buying some parts. I don't know what we were even talking about. But I was out at your shop. Scott Hansen was out there, another enthusiast. We'll talk about Scott in another podcast, but you had said, do you know him? And I'm like, no, why should I know him? And you said, you two do the exact same stuff. You should know each other. That's exactly. That's exactly what you said. And I'm like, okay. So you introduced me to Scott, and then Scott became my best friend.
Yeah.
From that day on, I mean, Scott was my best man at my second wedding. And we were friends from that day forward. We were
these two guys blew up trannies together all the time.
Yeah, we went.
Hold on, you blew a tranny together, or you blew up transmissions together?
No, I didn't mean it that way.
I just wanted to clarify. I don't know where this is going.
I started building hot rod gearboxes for Scott Hansen, and he was hard on equipment. He was hard on equipment, and I got pretty good service. He was never complained about how long they lasted.
No, he knew he was going to break them.
And you were really drag racing, and that's part of drag racing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I've helped him at Union Grove. Me and Don were down there getting dirty.
I got pictures of everybody thrashing on the car,
trying to get it, swapping out
the transmission.
Because he made it through the traps or something, and you made it, but the tranny was done.
Exploded, yeah.
It wasn't, and it made it back, and right away, we had to send somebody to your garage to get the tranny.
Yeah, we'd send somebody, and that's before I started carrying a spare with me. I always had a spare, but I never carried it with me because we had to change the axles and everything. It throws another 45 minutes at
so this
job.
Was the early day of underdog racing?
Yeah.
What year would you say this was? Ooh,
early 90s.
Early
90s? I mean, I built that car in 94, so it was probably 94, 95, 96, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you were really doing well that day, so we all dove in there and just got it.
It was a Bugfest, I think.
Yeah, it was Bugfest, and we made the pass, right?
Yeah,
we
got made the done. Pass. I probably won it.
Did you win the race or not? I can't remember that.
I was always happy if I made it into the money. That's all I really mattered to me. I didn't care if I won the race or not, as long as I made it into the money rounds. So what year did you start racing off-road racing?
1976. I raced the 200-mile race was for Bicentennial 200 in Crandon.
Mm. What was your car for that race?
I raced a Chenna two-seat buggy. It was just a 40-horse, a 1,200cc class.
Back then, everything was pretty budget-minded.
Oh, everything. It was budget-minded. You just barely had enough money to get to the race, barely had enough money for beer.
It was more for fun than anything.
But wherever at the Crandon, those races, I came home with 50, 60 bucks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
One race, $500, you know what I mean? Depending on the purses.
You could buy yourself 10 new Volkswagens with $500.
Well, yeah. What year was it? 1980, you won the
in
brush
1980,
run?
I won Crandon in Bad Company. I won 80 and 81 2 years in a row in my class.
Now, Bad Company is like...
it's a Chenneth 1000 race car.
Yeah, and that was his most successful.
Yes, it was 1976. The car was designed in 75. I got it in 76 and finished it in 77.
And that was kind of state of the art.
Can you give me a breakdown of the specs? So what was the body or it was something?
It's a tube chassis single seat race car with a 100-inch, they call it a 1000 because it had a 100-inch wheelbase. It was one of the first cars that had the long wheelbase. Cab forward, you sat in the rotating mass of the car, the driver sat. Okay. A single-seat car was fantastic handling and would fly and jump and do. It was just the gas.
Okay, and what motor you were running?
That I started out with a 1200 cc class, which was class 9 in score.
Okay,
and then eventually I put a 1600 in it and changed classes because my car was a little bit on the heavy side, and I was like, and I'm a fat guy. I weigh, you know, I go 220. I'm pretty fat.
And aren't we all?
I'm racing with all these guys that are young squirts. They weigh 150 pounds. I'm going.
Yeah, but they don't have the stamina.
No. Off-road racing was, I like the mud, the dirt. You race no matter what.
Yeah, it could be pouring rain. Still racing. Not like NASCAR. Not like the Daytona 500. Oh, it's raining.
But off-road racing was fun. And
the money thing kind of ruined.
And trucks ruined it.
Yeah, they once the big money started getting into off-road racing, the
who around here all held off-road racing courses?
At Lake Geneva, which doesn't exist anymore, they had the Memorial Day 100, which was a big deal. Mickey Thompson came out from California, and not the Mears brothers, but there was some, I can't think of their names right now, but
Ivan Stewart has his gang come out.
Yeah, Ivan Stewart did a guest. Yeah, I think he brought his single seat Toyota out one time, mm-hmm. and kicked everybody's ass.
Oh yeah, and it just ruins everything. You know, you got these local boys that think they're hot stuff, and Ivan Stewart from California comes and comes with a hauler and tech support and racing radios and all that.
Put
good
the
stuff.
Whooping to you guys, huh?
Yeah, and it just takes everybody just like, nah, man.
And then Crandon was a big deal. It started out with just home built buggies and Crandon buggies, and they had a big class with stock cars. You know, you put a roll bar in it and seat belts, and the early ones were a 100-mile race. And there were 50 or 60 American cars.
Is that why
there.
They called it Brush Run 101?
101, yeah.
Because 101 miles.
Yeah. And that ended after the first Crandons, the one lap was 25 miles.
Yeah, you went off into the woods, never to be seen again.
A lot of people didn't make
they
one
didn't
lap.
Make, yeah, they went out there, bore a wheel off, broke an axle, and they sat there the rest of the day.
Eventually, the spectator thing got really big, and they had big mud puddles, and people congregated at the mud bog. And
yeah, they wanted to see people get it stuck and unstuck.
And the spectators would swim in the mud in the racetrack.
It was like Woodstock.
It was a Woodstock and lots of beer drinking and it's different now, completely different. But
yeah. It's still going on today?
Oh, sure. The brush run is a very big deal.
Okay. Yeah, it's a big deal. Now it's a ESPN televised, you know, deal.
That's the new course is Crandon made so much money from spectators and stuff. They actually bought the land. Built a racetrack that has sprinkler system in it and water
grandstands
and a barn that it's a big business now. Crandon off-road racing put Crandon on the map.
Oh wow,
yeah, it's pretty cool because you got a jacket or something. 1980, I remember. Seeing.
I got we had a racing organization and instead of giving out trophies at the end, they would give you a jacket with your place and. If you're number one, you got a number one on the jacket, class champion, and it was kind of nice.
It was neat.
It was kind of cool stuff. I still have a couple of jackets left.
And these all earned with vintage Volkswagen-esque vehicles?
Well, actually, the cars are pretty technical, but they all Volkswagen 40-horse parts I started out with, and the 1600 was just a single-port 1600 motor with a restrictor plate under the carburetor. It dynoed out at about 80 horsepower. And so the cars would go 80 miles an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. And with the way it was geared and the big fat tires and stuff. So it was a fun ride and it was pretty safe. The cars, you could roll the thing at 80 miles an hour and keep racing.
Yeah, just flip it back over and keep going.
So did you ever get into like Formula V?
Well, I had a vintage Formula V, and a couple of guys knew I had 40 horse parts. I built a couple vintage Formula V motors. They weren't fast or they weren't like record setting motors, but at least get the guy out on the track and it had a little bit of beans. Mm-hmm. And then I was putting, you know, flipping ring and pinions to make Formula V trannies for these vintage guys. And I maintained a couple of vintage cars for a while. The guy had deep pockets and no mechanical ability. So I had to race prep the car and everything. So I thought this vintage Formula Vs would be fun and a moneymaker, but it only depends on the customer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Formula V guys are fun, but frugal.
They're frugal and they're old and they have money, but they don't want to spend. And yeah, that's Formula V has really.
I learned the hard way.
Yeah, Formula V is a different animal now. It used to be old rich guys, and now all those old rich guys are dead.
Have you ever raced at Road America? You go up there a lot, or
with the Porsche Club, we used to take the cars out on the track and just have a track day with my Cabriolet. On the Road America, I put hundreds of miles on.
So, what year vehicle is that? Would you
it's
say?
A 64 C Porsche C Cabriolet.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And what was done to it? Was it all stock class?
Completely okay. Stock. It wasn't. We weren't racing door to door. We were just chasing each other around.
Okay.
And we really weren't supposed to pass. This was 1974.
Okay.
And I sold all my Porsche stuff in 75 to build. So off-road racing.
Before your Volkswagens or before your dune buggies.
Right. Okay. The race cars, tube cars. So all that stuff. I used the Porsche steering boxes in the early days, Porsche spindles.
Yeah, those ZF steering boxes were the magic.
Yeah. And
it was one less turn, right? One less rotation.
One less turn, lock to lock.
Lock to lock, yeah.
And they were made out of metal, and they had a top. They didn't break.
Yeah, they had a cast.
Well, you could break them, but.
But they had a cast iron top plate instead of aluminum.
Right. It was a serious steer box, which if you hit a tree, they still break, which I've done.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, recently, he mentioned a Bad Company, which is the name of the most successful race car you had. Now, you brought that back home. You're going to restore that.
I'm going to try to get it before I die and get it back on the road. I have all the parts left as it was last raced in 1988.
So to recap real quick, what is the Bad Company?
That's the Chaneth 1000 100-inch wheelbase single-seat tube race car. And
it's got three shocks in the back and swing axle bus transmission, right?
Now it's IRS.
Oh, it's IRS now.
Yeah, now okay. It is. Yeah.
Okay. Before when you first built it,
when I first built it, we were using gear reduction boxes because we needed the ratios to run the small motors. You had to spin them up. You had to have big tires for ground clearance, so you were caught in between a rock and a hard place.
Now you built a big stroker motor for that eventually, didn't you?
No, I ended up with a 1976 Potter motor that came from the Funny Brothers racing car, but I never
never put
a big motor in the car.
So what are you going to restore it with?
I have all the 1600 single port stuff. All I need is I stole a case because I was desperate, and all I need to do is come up with a case and drill and tap it and full flow it, and I have all the barrels and pistons and the cool brand new heads then. And a Don Hatz cam. Don Hatz, he's been dead for a long time. I have all that stuff in the magic little area and the combo spindles and all. I'm going to put the car back to...
Yeah.
And I'm going to put it together as it was put away dirty.
Yeah, it's got Crandon dirt on it?
Yeah, it still has Crandon dirt on it right now. And I'm going to only lightly clean it up for working on it.
Peter drug it out of the barn. It was stored over at Ernster's.
It was at the Porsche shop.
Okay.
And it was in the basement of the barn for 30 years.
Was that last year you drug it out?
2 years.
Two years ago?
I don't know.
So what kind of condition was it when you drug it?
It had pigeon shit on it and everything.
It was pretty sad. it's pretty sad, but it's complete and it's, you know, it weathered really well in the barn. And right now it's a roller and I have the original bus tranny for it with the killer gears in it and all that. And I want to take it and let everybody drive it that never got to drive it. And it's nothing spectacular, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's neat. And it's historic.
And if we'd set up a little jump, and people don't get the experience off-road racing because flying over the jumps, and that's the kind of stuff that's fun.
Yeah, getting airborne.
Yeah, we were at Slinger Speedway a couple of years ago, and they had Bajas or dune buggy bus, Volkswagens racing the track there. So I mean,
they had the infield filled in with dirt
they put some jumps in it.
Yep,
shipping container.
Oh, cool!
And
they
piled dirt up against the shipping container, so you went underneath it and then you went over it. Yeah, I don't know how much dirt they pulled in there. A lot.
This was like I had just gotten back into Volkswagens after being out for a while, and I saw these things.
I missed that.
What was the game that you mentioned in our previous episode about? You used to play with Peter Kay. You'd bring over a part and you'd be like,
"Oh yeah." It was always Stump Peter.
I claimed that one time that I could identify any piece on the bug because I've cut them up even inside the pan.
I would call Peter and it'd just be, "Hey man, 2 seconds of your time." I'd ask the question, he'd give me the answer, and we'd hang up.
in my shop, I would build transmissions. I had to learn how to build transmissions because off-road's really hard on transmissions. We're blowing them up all the time. So we had to part out a lot of buses. I parted 6 or 7 split window buses and threw them away because I needed a transaxle.
That's the way it was back in the day.
Oh my God, the buses I threw away were just, it was hurtful. What I see for them now.
Yep.
And I couldn't give the things away.
Well, see, that's the reason they are so expensive now. It's so many of them hit the scrap pile because it's no different than, say, a Porsche 356. Them things were robbed of every usable part on them to put in another vehicle. And the bodies were so poorly made and rusted away that you just threw it away. Nobody thought nothing of scrapping a 356.
Oh, my God. I wish I could find, if any of our listeners have a 356, if they want to sell me on the cheap. Hit me up. I'll gladly take it. I don't care how rusty it is. That's like my dream car right there. I've been looking for one for years. But well, you can't find them for under $1 million.
I've cut 6 of them up. I'll throw them away.
Yep.
Yeah. Damn you.
People used to steal the brakes and the motors out of them, sticking them in their bug, and scrap the body off.
Yep. Oh, I had 3 59 Cabriolets that were really rusty.
Restorable, probably.
Have you seen my Ghia? My Ghia is pretty rusty, but I'm still bringing that thing back to life.
Well, those cars I shouldn't, all 6 of those 356s I cut up, I shouldn't have cut up. But that 52, you guys saw the pictures of it, that ended up going to Canada and getting restored.
Yeah, that turned out pretty nice.
Yeah. My summer car was a 64 Cabriolet in 1973, so it was only 9 years old, but it was really getting rusty and funky looking.
Yeah, the
356 is died because people drove them in the winter. You buy a Porsche and they drove it in the winter, and mine had a gas heater and it was kind of fun, but I knew enough.
If it had a gas heater, you pretty much hit the junkyard another 5 years sooner.
Wow. So let me ask you, so what vehicles do you own right now? What do you have sitting in?
Well, I have a ice race car. I got a Bug that I used to autocross. It's got a full cage in it. It's got a limited slip diff in it, a 2180 with dual 44s.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about was our...
Hold on, let him finish.
Remind me. Okay. Remind me.
Remind you what?
Of what I forgot I was going to say.
Okay. So what...
So the I before my back really went on the fritz, I used to autocross this full cage Bug with a limited slip in the 2180 down at Black Hawk. I went to Joliet, Illinois. At State Fair Park, they have a really neat road course that's a gas.
Midwest Council is the sanctioning body. Right. Yeah.
It was high-speed autocross, 2 cars on a track at a time. And you get to go as fast as your car will go. So on the oval at the Milwaukee Mile, my Bug is just a gas.
Yeah, I was on 3 wheels. I got pictures of you on 3 wheels.
Oh, yeah. I should have brought that picture. I never thought about that.
We got some pictures. We'll post.
The ice race car that I had, Prescott and I used to share an ice race car.
Yeah,
and
that's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah, the combination of we were too cheap to build a car by ourselves, so we combined our efforts and built one Frankenstein.
We started out with Spud, that car, the first disposable car.
Right, right, yeah.
And then
it was Spud because it was the
color of a potato.
Color of a potato. It was a, what was the name of it? Beige color.
Yes, it was terrible color.
That's sand.
But who cares?
That
horrible beige.
It was a
color.
Potato color. Okay.
Yeah, the second ice race car that we shared was real Frankenstein. That was a serious sideswipe wreck.
We had license plates, floors, and
but it was a solid enough car, and I cut the end of my finger off, and I made Prescott build an ice race tranny for it.
I built a tranny. He built a motor, and we flogged that car heavily.
You still got these cars now? Or
oh, no.
No, that rotted. It's back to earth.
So what ice race car do you have right now?
I use the black autocross car, which with the full roll cage and stuff, with the 2180 and the limited slip.
Gotcha.
And that car
We eventually built our own cars after having so much fun flogging Frankenstein that I built my own car and Peter built his own specific ice racing car. I ice raced personally for 10 years.
Right.
And we were serious about it.
Isn't the Frankenstein in that picture?
No.
No, the black bug's in there. Never mind.
Yeah, that picture. We're looking at a picture in the studio.
I didn't think to bring any ice race pictures of the old beater cars.
That's on Winnebago. That's Oshkosh.
Ken Volkman rolled his Super Beetle cross going through the traps. Yeah. We put it back on its wheels and kept going, man.
Yeah, he hit the berm and a solid ice berm, and that thing went over.
Early ice racing was a gas.
Yeah, we started out as a gentleman's agreement where we weren't going to get crazy and spend a lot of money on it. Okay, everybody's got to run Menards racing tires, and everybody's going to run a stock crank and a single carburetor. And we did that for a while. Who was it? Greg. Greg had a Type 4 motor with dual cars.
Yeah.
And he wasn't fast, so we really didn't care too much. And then he started getting faster, and then all hell broke
loose. Well, Tommy T's Ghia with that Type 4 motor was...
Yeah, and the 48 IDAs on it and everything. It's like, those guys, if they could learn how to drive, they were going to kick our ass, but... It didn't matter until they started getting fast, and then everybody got serious about horsepower, and then all hell broke loose. Everybody had I had a 2180 with 48 IDFs on it, and I think it was probably pushing 180 horsepower, and that's what it took because everybody had dual carbs and a stroker motor.
Sometimes we got six events, and it depends. The Wisconsin winters this year didn't even happen.
Yeah, it didn't even. I think that one year it didn't happen. I gave up. I'm like, I have thousands and thousands of dollars tied up in his car.
And tons of hours. That's why my black car is dual purpose, but I don't autocross anymore because I can't take the heat in the summer anymore. Getting old sucks, and I might get it out sometime and flog it yet.
Yeah.
I got old tires from the Porsche shop, vintage race tires from the 356. Oh, you remember
the time we put those on Frankenstein?
Oh, my God. We put some Formula V tires autocross it and we're rolling the sidewalls.
The rim would touch the ground
because
we had to think so sideways. Oh, my God.
The tires shouldn't have been on a bug.
No, we blew the brakes out of it. The drum brakes got so hot that the pedal went all the way to the floor.
It was a kind of a fast autocross thing, and it was a parking lot thing.
We were too much tire.
We tore up all them tires and end up. We just thought it'd be so cool to flog these old race car tires.
Yeah, there was a parking lot in Racine somewhere at some
school.
Yeah, some school. Yeah, it was a bad parking lot too. It wasn't that smooth asphalt. It was dirty and.
We didn't know about tire pressures or not, so we're rolling the edges on the tires and the rims hitting like Prescott says, what's that funny noise, man?
It's the wheel hitting the asphalt because the tires all folded.
I think
under.
We popped a couple of them, too. Yeah, we had a whole bunch of them.
Oh, we ruined a bunch of tires.
I got all the stuff from a vintage Formula V. I bought all
they were old and hard.
We thought, what the hell, try them.
Yeah.
Because it changes the gear ratios because the tires are so skinny.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. The tires were tiny.
Yeah, instead of 26, it takes it down to
21 maybe?
Or 20, I don't remember. 22? The form of, it was fun beating it up.
Yeah, that poor car took a beating, and then we parsed it out.
Anyway, you're asking about my other cars. I have a 356 Intermechanica Porsche Speedster replica that I built in 1982. I've had it for over 40 years.
Very nice. You want to sell it cheap?
No.
Okay. Damn it.
No, that's the car you had to replace.
That's a hole in the fender. I had to put the fender on it. The Intermechanica dealer in Chicago went out of business, and I bought two of them. They were on a pallet, and I built one for a stockbroker guy. And he paid me reasonably well on putting the car together for him. And he ended up having to sell it because of his divorce and stuff like that. But
In the days when 356 replicas weren't really that desirable.
No, they weren't desirable. I have the hot VWs with the Intermechanica when they first came out.
Right.
Because in 1977, I went to California to watch the Baja 1000. I jumped in my yellow van and went to California. Mike knew everybody in California. We could hang out. We helped two chicks from Alpine Valley move out to Modesto and filled my truck up with stuff in a U-Haul.
It sounds like the beginning of a porno.
It was a little bit. These girls were dirty leg waitresses from Alpine Valley.
Hippies, yeah.
And they were hippies. Absolutely, hippie broads.
This is going to Brew City after dark.
And we went to move them out to Modesto, and then she never told me that U-Haul trailer wasn't supposed to leave Wisconsin. So in the middle of the night, we had to drop.
You towed a U-Haul with the van.
Yeah. And I didn't know it was supposed to just stay in Wisconsin. So I end up putting the, in the middle of the night, we dropped it off at U-Haul, the dropped off the U-Haul trailer.
In California?
In Modesto. But the paperwork wasn't, I didn't rent it.
Right, right. It was all on her.
It was all on her. So I never heard the end of that story.
Oh, okay.
They were just waitresses from Alpine, and they paid my gas and hotel bills and to get them to Modesto.
Yeah.
And then he had friends in Modesto is not that far from San Francisco. And in Richmond, we had a friend that went to McGuanago that California Mike knew. So
we
stayed with people for free all the way to Ensenada. In L.A., we knew some people, you know what I mean? And then we knew somebody in Redwood City.
But what year was this?
It was 78.
78.
And see, so that, I stopped at...
That was a different California.
Yeah. We stopped at Intermechanic. I saw the cars being built. So I have an original Intermechanica Speedster. And the reason I bought that is I went to the factory and saw them how they were made. And I couldn't afford a real Porsche Speedster. Even at that time in 78, they were just starting to get valuable. And so I built this fiberglass one because I had all the Volkswagen stuff and put disc brakes on it and IRS it. And it's just a fun little car.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
And so I built the other one and got paid and blah, blah. It's the best quality kit car because it's got a subframe and the doors are supported. And
The doors shut like real doors and everything is well engineered. Yeah, there's more to it than a dune buggy.
It's a real reproduction. It's almost as close as you could get to a real, a solid car.
Yeah, but
the glass... And they weren't cheap with the glass, so it's solid as hell. My car it's got some spider cracks. It's amazing how well it survived.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do a thing to
it. You'll have to give us some pictures of it so we can post them on Instagram for some of the listeners out there, because it sounds like a pretty cool car.
But you got the Black Bug.
That's it.
The Intermechanica.
And I got rid of my Blue Bug as Aaron's new ice race car, and I don't have anything anymore.
No, down from 200 down to 2.
Well, at one time I had cars stored everywhere.
You had the storage unit.
I had a 356 SC coupe that it's done now. Pictures of it done.
Yeah. Wow.
The guy that bought it actually finished it.
That was a rusty heap.
There's a picture in that thing of the car in the rotisserie.
Okay.
That I got one picture left. I gave him the other pictures, but
I saw that car was in East Troy storage unit.
Yeah. So that car is actually done. I sat in it.
Oh, wow.
I didn't get to drive it because the motor wasn't done yet, but I
sat in it.
He's probably spent over $100,000 to
just restore
fix what I did. I put floors in it and all that stuff in when it wasn't fashionable. We built a car rotisserie so that you could spin a 356 around, and I started it, put a motor in it, drove it to another storage area. Eventually, I just kept moving it around.
Yeah.
And I just, in my mind, I couldn't get the car done, so I had to sell it as a project.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it always ended up being second fiddle to something else that was going on.
Yeah, it was a coupe, and I don't, I got my Speedster. Once you built a Speedster, even though it's not real, it drives as good as a real Speedster.
Oh, yeah. The replicas, I've never driven a real Speedster, but from what I hear people say, a replicas...
They drive better than a real
one. It's faster. It stops better. It just rides better. Yeah, it's amazing. The coupe you got rid of, now the coupes are big deals now.
Oh, yeah, the guy loves it. He's got quite a car collection, and I'm glad he got it done. And he's thanked me for selling it to him. Because it was a real numbers matching car.
Real, yeah.
And even the five wheels have the right dates on them.
Wow, yeah.
And the tool, it was a complete car that just was rusted to fuck.
Yeah, right.
And so I bought this car and I boxed everything and labeled stuff. I bought a 356 Cabriolet here in Muskego. I opened the, went to look at it. I opened the door and the door fell off and I got stung in the scrotum by the bees that came out of it and attacked me.
Yep. Yeah, we mentioned that in another podcast. It's either bees or mice.
Or raccoon shit.
Or raccoons, right? You don't know. When you open a door, you don't know what's going to jump out at you.
Well, I didn't expect the door to fall off.
And you didn't expect the door to be full of bees.
But anyway, I bought it for the drivetrain, and it was a 59, so it had a ZF steering box in it.
Yeah, it needed
to. And it didn't have many miles on it.
Yeah,
and it had a hard top. Oh. So I sold.
Oh, the hard tops.
I sold that to Mark S. Cookie.
Right.
That the hard top is worth a fortune, even back then.
Yeah, yeah. Now they're
a 356 Cabriolet. The factory would build a hard top that bolted down for the winter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because those cars had roll up windows and all that stuff.
Yeah, this car didn't even have a convertible top.
Oh, it's all is either.
It just was. They bought it with the option top,
bolted hard top down. Or no top.
Yeah, it was a strange car. And
do you even have a hard top for your inner Mechanica? Yeah, or no. You roof it all? Right?
No, I have the top's under the boot. The header bowl is broken, and I finally fixed it, but I never glued it.
Because I've never seen it with the roof up.
No,
you've probably never seen mine with the roof up.
No, I haven't.
I put the roof up once because I left the show, and it got super cold out. Okay,
we're out of time.
Yeah, we're out of time.
We're getting late here. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just any longer we talk, it's just more editing for me.
Right.
But I figured it's probably a good time to wrap it up. But thank you to Peter Kay for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for stopping on.
It was more fun than I thought.
but thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you to our listeners for listening today. Remember. Feel free to ask us any questions about today's show.
You want me to wrap it up?
Yeah, you wrap it up. My brain is fried.
Okay. As usual, share this podcast with whoever you want to share it with. You can always contact us at via email. Our email is bcbugtalk@gmail.com. We are on Facebook. Our Facebook page is Brew City Bug Talk. We're also on Instagram now, so follow us, share us on that. Be sure to put some pictures up of Peter's vehicles and some action shots and whatever else we can find. We'll put that on Instagram and also on Facebook. That'll about take care of it.
Don't forget to check out VW Trends magazine for all the latest trends in the Volkswagen scene. Check them out at www.vwtrendsmagazine.com. All right. Thank you very much for listening and have a good day.
All right. Peace out.